not only as consumers do we have the ability to influence how the industry sort of goes about these manufacturing procedures, but we're actually the only ones that can do it. You can advocate and you can sort of put on, you know, various sanctions and taxes and political things, but at the end of the day, if the consumer isn't demanding it, it's not going to happen.
Socks, those humble little knitted things you put on your feet. We all own them, but I reckon most of us don't give much thought to them. What if buying your socks more consciously could help change the world? In this episode, we're hearing from Hassan Ahmad, who with two of his mates from uni, founded the social enterprise Conscious Step in 2013. Their tagline is thoughtfully made socks that fight for causes that matter. They use organic cotton, they're fair trade, and a chunk of the money from every pair sold goes to charity. They also look pretty cool. Boring black socks are so last season. Hassan, welcome to Who Made My Clothes.
Thanks so much for having me, Claire.
Our pleasure. I want to start by talking about Fashion Revolution. I know you're a newbie to this. What do you like about the campaign?
Well, look, you know, the things that I really like about Fashion Revolution is that it focuses on education and accountability. And I think really those are some of the two biggest levers, if not the two biggest, in sort of, you know, bringing ethical fashion into the mainstream. I think, you know, educating consumers about sort of essentially the unsavory realities of the garment industry in many cases and the effect that, you know, their purchases can have on, you know, on people that have been involved in their creation and also in many instances the environment. And also, you know, it educates us about the brands which, you know, at the very least are considerate of these issues and at the very best, I guess, really embody the values of sustainable manufacturing. So I think that, you know, education, which you guys, you know, are doing a fantastic job of, is really important. And, you know, a big part, I think, almost the other side of that coin is that it makes the brands accountable. You know, sort of shining a light on their practices and what they're willing and not willing to make public, I think can, you know, guide us as consumers towards the brands that, you know, that really do, as I said, sort of embody these values, or those that might be a little more, you know, a little less hesitant to release them.
Yeah. Why do you think that there's more interest out there in these issues?
It's multifactorial. I think firstly, the effects are becoming more prominent. Well, certainly the Rana Plaza instance, you know, is at that stage, it was fairly undeniable, you know, and it really brought the issue into prominence. And unfortunately, you know, by the time the effects are that obvious, it often means that the problem's fairly advanced. But, you know, I think we're seeing more and more of these things. And also documentaries, you know, like The True Cost and sort of, you know, campaigns like the Fashion Revolution are really making it easier for us to see the effects of unsustainable manufacturing practices. So I think that's bringing it to light a lot more. And I think, you know, the second thing really is that, you know, consumers are becoming a lot more savvy these days. You know, I think a lot of that probably came from the global financial crisis some years ago. But now, you know, we're a little more suspicious, I think, about what companies do and say and won't just take them at face value. So, you know, I think now we're sort of peeling past a few of those layers and actually looking at, you know, what's behind a lot of these brands and the claims that they make. So I think that's probably why you know, these issues are becoming more prominent now than they were perhaps 5 years ago.
That's actually a really interesting perspective, looking at it from that idea that perhaps we're not as mindlessly trusting of brands as we used to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's a factor.
We're going to get into Conscious Step in a moment, and that's a brand that people can be sure to trust. But I'd like to know a little bit more about you first in the fashion industry. You're a junior doctor. You're a bloke. How interested are you in fashion and style beyond your sock drawer?
probably a lot more than I used to be, but a lot less than most guys in fashion, I'd say. Before we started Conscious Step, I wasn't as, I guess, cognizant of style or interested in fashion as I am now. It's probably because I was a little bit younger as well. But, you know, I think guys are lucky in many cases. You know, I think for us, a lot of sort of the styles are fairly timeless.
Yeah.
We're not so much victims to, you know, like the 52 season year kind of thing that I think women sometimes can be.
Yeah.
There's just a lot more choice and, you know, evolution of the style that happens for them. But, you know, just by proxy of having to, you know, look at designs and sort of be aware of customer trends and seasonality and stuff, I've developed more of an interest in it. It's actually a little bit of a fine line, I think, because, you know, with style and fashion, it's really important, I think, to, you know, to feel good about what you wear and to feel good about, you know, how you present yourself to other people. And realistically as well, it affects how people treat you and how people sort of, you know, react to you, especially in the workplace. But, you know, I think too much of a focus on, you know, how you look can perhaps be to your detriment. So, you know, that's been interesting as well, sort of seeing those forces at play. But, yeah, I'm not going to win any fashion awards anytime soon.
But you will for your socks. I was going to mention that the menswear market is growing. It grew by 70% between 1998 and 2014. Mm. So men are shopping for clothes, perhaps not at the rate that women are, but certainly there is that, you know, they are buying fashion. How much did you think before you began Conscious Step about who made your clothes? Did you look at labels?
Being involved in Conscious Step and starting Conscious Step has very much made me a lot more aware of these issues than I was in the past.
Right.
You know, I'm almost to the point where I can't even remember how much I did know about these issues.
Yeah.
But certainly a lot less. You know, I think in the past, sort of, you know, 5 years ago and prior to that, you know, I was more, the things on my mind were more about, you know, how did they look? How much did they cost? And in some case, you know, how long would these last? And the whole idea of, you know, who did make my clothes, you know, what was sort of the story behind this? You know, how many people have been involved in the creation of this garment? And was it all done, you know, in a way that I would sort of be okay with? And, you know, I don't think those are things that I used to think about.
People just don't know. I mean, it's a growing conversation now, and it is a conversation that more people are having, but there are so many people who just wouldn't think about it because they don't know.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right, you know, and I think that's why it's so important, you know, sort of the work that you guys are doing, and also that, you know, the brands now are taking it on themselves a little bit as well to help educate people about, you know, these issues. You're exactly right. It just wasn't something that had a lot of sort of widespread prominence, these ideas. So it is good to see it heading in that direction.
All right. Can we really change the world through socks?
Great question. Look, I think, you know, when I think of this, I really think of the individual. You know, perception really is reality, I think. And if we can change the perception of one person, if one person that buys our socks now starts to think like I did, you know, initially, these issues were never on their, you know, on the horizon for them at all. But now perhaps they're thinking about, oh, you know, just this idea that what I buy, you know, within fashion or even outside of fashion can have an effect on, you know, the world around me. And if for them, you know, this becomes something that they do think about where in the past they didn't, and maybe it's an idea that they share with people around them or maybe not, you know, or maybe it's something now that just sort of registers when they're, you know, browsing at the, you know, at the mall, you know, the next time they're down there looking for a pair of jeans. If selling one pair of socks to one person can do that for them, I think that changes world, or their reality at least, in terms of these kind of issues. And I think, you know, if that one decision perhaps then has this effect whereby one garment worker in India, you know, is able to take home a wage that is fairer as a result of perhaps consumers supporting ethical practices, perhaps they can live in a better quality housing situation, or, you know, it means they have more food for their family or something like that, then absolutely that changes their world. That isn't a matter of hundreds and thousands of dollars saved, or, you know, forests, you know, being saved from cutting down, which is great. But, you know, I think at an individual level, these kind of issues really can make a difference.
And I always like that idea that it's good to remember that everything is connected, that nothing is out without cause and effect. So yeah, a little thing can actually have an impact, albeit a little one. It's a chain, isn't it? Everything's connected.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think by virtue of the way, you know, we sort of structure our knowledge and the way that industries are sort of separated, just because it makes it easier for us, or, you know, because that's the way that perhaps universities structure their faculties, we don't really think, we think often in terms of in isolation and, you know, and, you know, this is fashion and this is the environment and, you know, this is sort of social welfare, but, you know, they really are, you know, interconnected in ways that often we're only discovering now.
And Conscious Steps does bring several of those elements together. It's an ethically produced sock brand that helps support charities such as Oxfam or Action Against Hunger or Trees for the Future, which is one I love, with each pair that's sold. I wonder if you could just explain the story behind the founding of Conscious Step.
So Conscious Step was created by myself and two of my colleagues slash friends in the end of 2013. So essentially it was myself, Prashant Mehta, who was one of my friends who I met at, he was on exchange at my university in Sydney. I met him there, and he was a finance major from New Jersey, and he was studying over in America and sort of came over here on exchange. And then the third chap was a guy called Adam Long, who's here in Sydney, who was working in a marketing strategy company. I actually met him when I went to a crowdfunding.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, it was how to do a crowdfunding campaign. So I guess to take a step back, you know, Prashant was over here because he was sort of, you know, didn't want to go and walk and work on Wall Street or whatever, and was just living at my house. And
right.
It was funny. Yeah, he was literally sleeping on my couch. It was funny because in the weeks and the months leading up to it, you know, we were just sort of, you know, chewing on ideas and stuff. And, you know, we were like, oh, wouldn't it be cool to sort of, you know, make something. And we weren't sure what, if it was a service or if it was a product, you know, it was something that, you know, allowed people to sort of give back or support in a manner that, you know, was sort of unique to them. But at the same time, we're like, well, you know, you can sort of do that already with charities. And Prashant, for example, was instilled as a child, you know, his mum used to give him money every week and he used to sort of put it in an envelope and go and sort of, you know, give it to the charity that he, yeah, that he was. So it's really interesting to see how these kind of conversations and these ideas really turn to the formation of an idea. And
yeah,
you know, one day we just sort of, you know, had this idea about, you know, socks that give back. You know, Prashant actually, I'm not even joking, he like woke up one day, he's like, I had this dream, this idea.
I had a dream.
Yeah, literally. And yeah, socks. And so, you know, I was like, that's actually really good. I'm all about that. And then, so, you know, we were like, well, let's do a crowdfunding campaign because that's a great way to sort of assess the appetite of the market and
right.
to, you know, in best cases, you know, raise a bit of money as well to go and make them. And, yeah, that's where I met Adam because I went to a crowdfunding presentation and he was running it and I went and spoke to him and he's like, that's a really great idea. Let's do that. So yeah, the three of us did this crowdfunding campaign at the end of sort of my last year of medical school, and we were luckily enough successful in reaching our goal. And
how much did he raise?
I think we raised about 23,000.
Right.
So, you know, it's not a massive amount by any means. There are a lot more successful crowdfunding campaigns, but it was more about.
But it was enough to start.
Yeah, that's right. Like, it was enough to start, and probably more importantly, it showed us that like people thought this was a good idea.
Yeah.
You know, and gave us a bit of confidence in it. So yeah, we went off and we got those made. I moved to New York a few months after that was finished. And we fulfilled our initial order, but not without significant issue. We actually had some quality control issues. We have an embroidery on the side of the sock.
Oh, yeah,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, and sort of up to 50% of those weren't to the, you know, standard that we were happy with. And that was our first, I think, introduction to the world of manufacturing and all the issues that come with it.
It's so interesting to hear you say that because it is tricky to make stuff. I've done it myself, you know, and without experience, these things can sneak up on you and be a headache, can't they? I mean, it's not that easy.
Oh, no, absolutely not. You know, it's not easy at all. And I think it's lucky that we didn't know, because if we weren't that ignorant about it, we probably wouldn't have gone into it to start with. Yeah, and so, you know, I was over in New York with Prashant, and we built the company there for 2 years, you know, continued to grow over there and sort of build our partnerships and our products. And then I came back to Australia at the beginning of last year to work in medicine, because basically if I didn't come back and work within 2 years, then the degree would expire. So I was like, well, I should probably come back for a bit and do that.
I do have to say, being a junior doctor has got to be one of the most high-stress occupations on the planet, and you're doing that while running a business, albeit with your partners. You must be tired.
Yeah, no, sleep would be good. It would be nice to get some more sleep. No, but, you know, I think if you make it work, you know, you have to sacrifice certain things.
No friends.
Certainly less friends than I used to have, I think. Some haven't heard from me for a while. But there's always this feeling that I'm, you know, you're not contributing, you know, to the extent that you'd like, or that you're not pushing things forward, you know, as fast as you want them. But I really don't think that ever goes away, that feeling goes away. And it was there when I was, you know, sort of working, living, and then doing it every single day. So,
yeah,
you know, you make it work.
Talking of making it work, what was it about socks that you thought, that you realized would be a great vehicle to make this social enterprise work?
There's a few reasons. The main one is, you know, everyone needs socks, more or less. It's something that everyone buys.
Yeah.
They do it fairly frequently. And there's not a whole lot of thought to that purchase or the brands or, you know, the sock brands that you buy. So the brand loyalty is fairly low. It's not a particularly interesting product. And so for that reason, I think it makes a great medium to sort of overlay a message on.
And there's no great investment required. It doesn't cost $1 million to buy a pair of socks. So I guess people are willing to give it a try, right?
That's right. You know, and that was really a big idea that was behind Conscious Step. You know, it was sort of identifying the barriers to giving, because we all, you know, I think, you know, everyone to, you know, greater or lesser extent wants to do good, you know, wants a world where people are happy and not suffering, and, you know, that the planet will be here for subsequent generations. You know, I think that's a fairly ubiquitous attitude. But it's the, you know, it's the barriers of, say, time. You know, I don't have time to look into what's the most important issues right now, or I don't have time to vet the charities and the organizations that are working towards them. And it's sort of the effort, that time, that effort that's required in doing so. And often, you know, money, I don't have enough money for this to be meaningful. So the idea with socks is like, look, this is something you have to buy anyway. So if we can roll it into that purchase, then it becomes convenient. You're already doing it. You know, it's not a change in habit. And if the brand loyalty is not there, there's not a big sort of shifting cost for the consumer to buy. It's like, oh, well, I may as well buy these ones. I didn't really care about those ones anyway. And look, at the end of the day, like, there was this sort of trend of sort of fun socks, you know, and as guys, we don't have a lot to work with when it comes to our wardrobe in terms of, you know, our personality and whatnot. So, you know, and so they, you know, raise conversations and, you know, sort of garner comments. So, you know, for those reasons, we felt that, you know, picking socks is the product that we were going to, you know, put a message into and sort of use our concept with was the right idea.
And you're absolutely right when you talk about them being fun. I mean, they're vibrant, they're very bright, they're cool, they're patterned. That is the appeal of them. They're visually exciting, I reckon. I mean, they're not just a pair of black business socks. Tell me about the designs.
It's funny, you know, when we started out, like, neither of us had any fashion experience. So we literally would just walk around the stores and we were like, which of these sell the best?
Right.
You know, or we'd go and just sort of ask people, ask the store clerks and sort of, you know, went from there in terms of, you know, the guidance of those initial designs. But then once we sort of passed that first ones we had for our crowdfunding, we tried to have the designs reflect either the cause of the organization that they support. So each design is partnered with a different charity and has a different impact associated with it. And so, you know, our socks for Trees for the Future are green and, you know, have this sort of tribal design, which, you know, we hoped or, you know, would sort of remind people of, you know, the importance of the environment and just the cause that they're supporting.
Yeah.
You know, and then we have sort of our Action Against Hunger socks are done in the colors of the brand sort of logo or the color scheme.
Right. I love the polka dot ones that are for Room to Read, which is a charity I actually have known quite a bit about. It focuses on girls' education in Africa and Asia. I love the labels as well. The labels that give you that kind of very tangible result. So on the Room to Read socks, it says socks that give books, buy a pair, and it equates to 2 school books for these kids. It's very, very poignant, very, very easy to understand and direct, isn't it? How hard is it to do that for each charity?
Going to your point of having a really clear, crisp message, you know, I think that's really important. Firstly, just to sort of stand out within the marketplace anyway. You know, nowadays, I don't know the exact numbers, but we're sort of exposed to a ridiculous number of messages every day. And you might have a split second whereby, you know, someone walked past it or it sort of comes up on their browser very quickly. So you have a very short amount of time to convey a fairly complex message about, like, these are socks, but they support a charity which has this particular impact and yeah. They're sort of, you know, ethically made. And so it's, for that reason, we really wanted to make the impact as tangible as possible. So, for example, Trees of the Future, it's buy these socks, plant 20 trees. And we know that
happens. How could you not? Yeah, how could anyone say no?
Yeah, right. I, one of the big issues as well that we learned when, you know, interviewing people about their sort of how we could improve the giving experience was that they often, with charities, they just sort of give money and don't know where it goes. So for us, we wanted to try and make it as tangible as possible because it just sort of brings people closer to that impact they're creating and ultimately encourages them to do so more. So, you know, where we can, we work with our charities to have that very particular impact associated with it. However, you know, in some cases, that's just not always possible. And that might be because it's harder to quantify what they're doing. So, for example, Global Citizen, they are a sort of a social advocacy platform, and they do all of their stuff digitally. So they have,
okay.
You know, they encourage all of their users to sign petitions and to sort of repost things on social media and, you know, really sort of gain traction for particular campaigns. And they're able to measure their outcomes, you know, in terms of sort of, you know, money saved or, you know, impact here and there, but it's harder to put that to a sock.
You can't say these socks caused 3 petitions to fly.
Exactly. And so, you know, in some cases, the message is a little more general. And, you know, the other thing as well is as we grow and the amount of money that we contribute to these organizations gets bigger, it's easier to have a tangible impact, or it's easier to display from the charity's point of view. Just because some particular projects need a certain, you know, amount of money to be able to say that, you know, to attribute certain changes. So yeah, you know, in all cases, it's not completely there yet, but we work towards it and we prioritize it as much as we can. We've been pretty happy with how well we've been able to go so far.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm interested to know how you go about selecting the charities that you work with. And can you tell us a little bit about that? And yeah, how do you pick them and what are some of your own personal favorites?
It was a few years before Conscious Step, but I was lucky enough to intern at the WHO in Copenhagen. And I came across it was the first time I came across this idea of the then Millennium Development Goals. There were 8 of the Millennium Development Goals. They're sort of the most important issues to the planet, basically.
Right, wow.
You know, as decided by, you know, prominent academics and sort of expert working groups within the United Nations. And so, you know, it was education, gender equality, environmental preservation, and so on. And I thought, wow, that's really interesting, you know, because there are so many of these different causes and, you know, what is actually the most important? Because I'm sure there are simply some that have more impact than others and that have, you know, more of an effect on us than others. And so I just really like this idea of having a cause framework. And I was just surprised that there wasn't a whole lot of, they weren't very famous, really. They just weren't very well known. And so when we created Conscious Step, you know, I was like, oh, well, we need to use this framework. You know, we need to align ourselves with what, you know, essentially humanity's deemed the most important challenges. And so the Millennium Development Goals have since gone through a sort of evolution, and now there's 17, and they're called the global goals, but essentially it's the same idea. And so basically we choose our charities to support one each of those causes.
Okay.
One each of those global goals. So, you know, we have one charity that with Trees for the Future will support, you know, the global goal that relates to environmental conservation. You know, we have one that, you know, Room to Read, that relates to the global goal in terms of education.
Yeah.
So that's how we picked them from the cause perspective. And then in terms of the charities themselves, you know, we like to work with effective charities. So organizations that have sort of the most tangible improvement. So for example, malaria nets are one of the most cost-effective ways to save a human life. And, you know, that can very simply be quantified. you know, we try and pick effective charities, and we have to use sort of third-party organizations like charity watchdogs and things that rate charities to sort of see how well they go. And it's often a lot more complicated than just what's the charity by which the largest percentage goes directly to the beneficiaries rather than overheads and administration. But it's more complicated than that.
It's so cool to hear that it's not arbitrary. I mean, that there's real systems behind how you're choosing who to work with. It's very kind of, as I would expect from a doctor, but, you know, it's very measured, very tangible, very transparent.
Yeah, you know, I think you're right. And but in saying that, though, as well, one of the a big thing is simply, do we like the people that we're working
right.
with? You know? Like, do we like the organization? You know, are they about our, you know, are they excited about working with us? You know,
yeah.
are we excited about working with them? Like, if it's not there, like, you know, if the vibe's not there, then there's no point. So there's that too, which is less quantifiable.
How much is a pair of your socks and how much of that retail price goes towards the charities?
It depends sort of where you buy them.
Yeah.
But basically in the US, they're US $15. And in Australia, they're about $19.95.
Okay.
Now, just to briefly cover sort of the way that retail markup works, say if we have a product that's $20 on the shelf, 10 of that will go to the retailer. And then of that, about half of that goes to the cost of the goods. So say it costs us $5 to make it. Of that cost, about 30% of our profit goes to the charity.
It's interesting that you raise that. I'm not sure how many people are aware of exactly what wholesale markups are, but generally in fashion in Australia, wholesale prices are marked up by 2.2. So
yes,
that
right.
profit margin, you know, people often say, how much does it cost to make and how much are you making? But actually, if you, for instance, buy a T-shirt from Kmart for $10 and then you wonder how much could have gone to the makers of that T-shirt, it's fractional because there's this wholesale markup, there's taxes
yep.
to pay, there's in-store promotions, there's many more costs on top of the price of making something. I want to just skip back to how Conscious Step socks are made. You mentioned fair trade certification and the fact that you use only organic cotton.
Yeah.
I know that getting to that point was a journey. It's never immediately easy, is it, right? Do you want to just share with us the story of how you set out to get your products made and what you learned along the way?
Again, I sort of mentioned before, I'm sort of lucky that we had no manufacturing experience, because if we knew how difficult it was,
you wouldn't have done it.
So, yeah, as you mentioned, you know, we started off with sort of organic cotton. We knew that we wanted to make them with cotton that had been grown. Well, the process used to grow it and cultivate it and pick it, et cetera, was, you know, as minimally impactful on the environment as possible, and also to the sort of the workers that were involved. So that led us to India, because India makes the majority of the world's organic cotton, and they really invented the process of, you know, organic cotton growing and harvesting and so on. And so, you know, it, like always, you know, you start with Google, right? So
right.
we just, you know, went online, and I remember just emailing a bunch of people, you know, as many people that I could find, as manufacturers, and, you know, very quickly came up against various issues. You know, so there was language problems, you know, there was issues with sort of transparency in terms of the quality, in terms of, it was pretty apparent that different companies held the importance of these, you know, the values of sustainable manufacturing to more or lesser extent. Some people didn't care about it. And, you know, some people at least claimed to, you know, to really support organic cotton farming and spinning practices and so on.
I was going to say, you said these few words to me, which I thought was so poignant, and I wrote them down when we were preparing for this conversation before. You said, you need to be there. I mean, otherwise you're taking people at their word. Unless an outfit is certified by an external board,
yeah.
you just have to believe them unless you go there, right? So you went
That's
there.
Right. Yeah, that's right. You know, I went there because certainly to start with, we didn't have money to, you know, to pay for these certified, you know, the certification, you know, up to the end product. We can work with fair trade organic certified manufacturers and farmers, which is what we ended up doing, right? So I just had to go there. And I went there, and I remember even while I was there, I was just emailing people being like, look, can I come visit your factory? Can I come visit your factory? You know, show me what you got going on. And I worked, and we still do work with a buying agent. And, you know, she's been amazing. You know, she is like, she runs this sort of women-only little organization that employs sort of 5 to 10 women there, and she really sort of advocates for us. her whole sort of career has been working within, you know, sort of sourcing sustainable yarns and sort of manufacturing facilities. And she's been great. And she's on the ground there in India, and we wouldn't have been able to do it without her, you know. So I think having that sort of local expertise is crucial.
Where did you go?
I went to, this was in New Delhi and sort of the surrounding area. So I went and visited a bunch of manufacturers there, and you know, it's also hard because, you know, that you don't know how much they've planned for your visit, or you don't know what they've necessarily told their workers to say. There's only so much, you know, that you can see. Like, I don't know the quality of the water effluent, you know, that comes off from the dyes. You know, I don't know, you know, the sort of the welfare conditions that, you know, the workers are living in and things like that.
Yeah.
We do what we can. And, you know, up until what we can see and hear and sort of, you know, the reputation that we can research on, you have to go by these certifications, as you mentioned, you know, and these are these sort of third party organizations like Fair Trade International that go in and they audit the supply chain and they sort of measure them against various metrics. Just this year, we have become Fair Trade certified. So that's been awesome for us. Yeah. And, you know, they're an amazing organization. You know, working with them, you know, has educated us even about these processes. And it sort of adds that additional layer of confidence to us and the consumer that, you know, the product is one that has been made with consideration for people and the planet.
Oh, yeah. Well, congratulations on that, because it is such a complicated process, isn't it? And I think, you know, snaps to you for getting there in the end, because it does give the shopper that peace of mind that what they're buying has been produced as ethically as you say it has, because we know, because it's fair trade. And that's so powerful. It really is. We did touch on this before, but issues like poverty and global warming can seem so overwhelming, right?
Yeah.
How do you keep your head straight? How do you personally keep focused and focus on the change that you can make in the world?
We have to be realistic about how we go about trying to motivate people to do it, you know? And I think that, one of the reasons that we made Conscious Step was to make it as easy as possible to do it, you know, and to not, so you don't have to think about it. You don't have to have that, you know, every time you go about doing it, oh, you know, am I contributing to the right cause here? Am I doing something right? You know, do I have to think about it? How much am I giving? You know, you want to have to make that decision once and then not worry about it.
Yeah,
you know, and know that you're doing the right thing. I think that, you know, we're sometimes doing a bit of a disservice by sort of hero worshipping people like Bill Gates and Elon Musk, who, you know, there's no bigger Elon Musk fan than me. I'll say that right now. But, you know, I think it almost places some too heavy expectations on us.
Too much pressure.
Yeah. And the thing is that it really is, particularly within fashion, it's interesting because it is not only as consumers do we have the ability to influence how the industry sort of goes about these manufacturing procedures, but we're actually the only ones that can do it. You can advocate and you can sort of put on, you know, various sanctions and taxes and political things, but at the end of the day, if the consumer isn't demanding it, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, vote with your wallet. If we don't buy stuff that's badly made, it won't be made. There'll be no market for it.
Precisely right. You know, but the issue there is that there's this diffusion of responsibility. We all think that the other person's doing it, but really no one is, you know, or a lot less people are. So I think it's, you know, it's being realistic about that. You know, I'm not going to become Bill Gates and just donate $10 billion. But it's also understanding that I do actually have the responsibility to...
Right.
To change it, you know, and if I'm not going to do it, other people are going to think the same thing and it's not going to happen. So, you know, I think it's about, you know, realistically accepting your part in it all, living those values, even quietly, you know, if it just means sort of speaking with those people around you, you know, people that you care about, your family, your friends, or even just, you know, as I said before, just making that purchase decision that perhaps, you know, you might have to spend a little bit more, but you'll know that somewhere, someone is benefiting from that. And, you know, probably it means that your stuff's going to last longer as well and you're going to be happier with it.
It's a powerful proposition. Conscious Step. I love it. But Hassan, I wonder if we might just finish up with the tale of from New Delhi to New York, along with a fashion line inspired by graffiti, a Brooklyn bar that sells cakes and booze. I would have voted for that one. And a cat cafe. Conscious Step made a 2015 list of the coolest new businesses in New York City. Tell me about the moment that you found that out.
Oh, yeah, look, it was pretty great. You know, I think I was just on GChat or something, and we were working in a co-working space, and one of the other guys, who was like an intern for one of like the illegal stuff, he's like, oh, dude, congratulations on this, and sort of sent it through. And I looked at it, I was like, oh, man, it's awesome. I haven't even seen that before. But, yeah, you know, that was great, you know, a great moment. And I think, yeah, my mum was actually pretty stoked to see that. I was happy to be able to send that through to her, you know. But, you know, things like that are great.
It's so
because
cool.
They sort of remind you that you're doing well, you know. But at the same time, it's like, it's just sort of the day-to-day, you know. Are we living these values? You know, are we putting in the extra effort where other people would it to make sure that, you know, we're doing something that is making a positive contribution to the world? So.
You didn't even let it go to your head.
That's right.
Well done, mate. Thank you. Thank you so much. It's been so interesting to talk to you and to hear your insights around this really, really interesting space. Thank you. Who Made My Clothes is a co-production between Jackrabbit FM and Fashion Revolution Australia and New Zealand. It's hosted by me, Claire Press from Wardrobe Crisis, and produced by Brooke McCallery. Editing is by Ryan Pemberton and Brooke McCallery. And you can find out more about the show and about all the brands that we feature by hopping onto the Fashion Revolution website.
Thank you to the Hipstones for the music. This track is Read Your Mind from the album Wise Man, available on iTunes or Spotify. To hear more, go to thehipstones.com. To find out more information and to take part in Fashion Revolution Week, head to the website. It's fashionrevolution.org, and you need to search for Australia or New Zealand. On social media, search for the hashtags Who Made My Clothes and Fashion Revolution, and you'll find heaps of inspiration as to how you can get involved.
Jackrabbit FM.
For your ears.
Who is that? Hi, Puck Pass.